Welcome to the Live Painter Podcast. In the world of events, there's a magical intersection where live painting transforms ordinary gatherings into unforgettable experiences. I'm Jamie, and along with my co-host Amanda, we're here to take a peek behind the easel of live artists all over the world and foster the growth of our own little corner of the events industry, one story, or should we say brushstroke, at a time.
Whether you're a seasoned artist looking to elevate your live painting game, a new artist thinking about the possibility of painting at events, or you're even an event pro just wondering what goes on inside a live painter's head, the Live Painter Podcast has got you covered. So grab your brushes and let's get right into today's episode.
Okay, so let's talk about this candy draft that you've been talking about. Tell me how it works.
Well, before we do that, I just want to make a little note for anyone who's listening. I know sometimes we get complaints about the sound, and unfortunately, I'm not a professional sound mixer. I just do my best to make this podcast. The reason I'm mentioning this today is we had a huge problem in our new construction home that we just moved into. It was not built correctly, and it's been a huge nightmare. And right now, there are like 10 industrial fans going all throughout the house. So if you hear a buzzing sound, unfortunately, there's not too much I can do. And we can't wait to record this until after they're gone. We have to record it today. So I just want to put that little disclaimer out there.
I don't think we can hear it. But
I don't think you'll be able to hear it. But I just wanted to mention it in case, you know, people are like thinking there's something wrong with their stereo or whatever.
Yes, nothing is wrong.
No one listens to this on a stereo probably, but you guys know what I mean.
Other than that, we will move on with the show. So we were going to, as of this date today, it's November 2nd, but we have been talking a lot lately in the past week or so about candy. Obviously, it was just Halloween. I hope you all had a good Halloween.
We didn't.
Well, no, we didn't.
It was horrifying. It was. Well, I guess it was on
Halloween,
theme.
Yeah, Halloween's
it was
supposed
on theme.
To be.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought it would be fun to just do a Halloween candy draft.
Now, is this going to be one of those blind drafts that you've had me do before, or are we just going to start picking sides?
No, we just start picking.
Well, we have different opinions on a lot of candies, but we have the same opinion on a lot of candies, so who would want to go first if you were drafting a candy to your kickball team here?
Oh, am I starting?
Yeah. Ladies first.
Should I be strategic and take things that I know that you're going to want?
No, I think you want to pick the one that you like the most.
This is really hard for me.
Well, you're going to try to assemble a team of like five that you really like. So
this is really hard for me personally because I have weird candy opinions in some ways. I think I just have to go with my gut, though. My number one favorite candy of all time is the Fruit Tootsie Roll. Fruit Tootsie Roll is my number one favorite candy, and I buy, like, giant bags of them whenever I'm in the mood for candy. It's the best, except for the vanilla ones.
Not the vanilla ones.
I don't like the vanilla ones.
She leaves them for me.
Ugh, no. It's like, I want fruity candy. Why am I getting vanilla? But anyway, that would be my first pick.
Solid.
Yeah.
I'll go with my favorite candy bar, I guess, because I know you don't really care for it. The Milky Way.
No.
I don't get it. What is wrong with the Milky Way?
It's too smooth. It's like I'd rather have the Snickers that has that crunch to it. I don't like Milky Way. My second one, I think I would go ahead and take the Kit Kat.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I'll take number two as the Twix.
Oh, I was going to put Twix on mine.
Yeah.
Ugh, okay. Twix was like going to be my next one.
And we're not just doing Halloween candy. We're doing candy period.
I mean,
I'll try to steer it towards Halloween.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other for the most part. There's not too many candies you can't get outside of Halloween.
Sure.
Other than candy corn and the caramel apple pops.
Yeah, that's true.
That's really it. For number three for me, I guess since you took Twix, I'll go with Snickers.
Okay, I'm gonna really burst your bubble now, because number three, is this number three now?
Yeah.
I'll go with that Reese's.
That's fine.
Here's the question. Do I have to specify what kind of Reese's it is?
No, you can just take Reese's. Other than Reese's Pieces, that doesn't count. But any shape or size of Reese's.
The different forms of the Reese's cup are all the same?
Yeah.
Okay. Take that.
And then I think for my fourth one, I will go Skittles.
Really?
Yeah.
You're going Skittles for number four?
I think so.
Now, do you get all flavors of Skittles?
It's hard because we just opened our Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party candy bags that we got at Magic Kingdom.
So that's what's on your mind?
There was tons of Skittles in there that I didn't realize, and I love Skittles, so I've been having a lot of Skittles like the past day.
You would go Skittles over Starburst?
Oh, Starburst.
Now, you already said it, so...
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I will be taking the Starburst and all of its subsidiary favorite flavors.
That's rough. Okay, so for my last one. So far I have Fruit Tootsie Rolls, Kit Kat, Snickers, and Skittles.
It's a good squad.
I have a couple of ideas here, and I'm like torn.
See, I think I know where your brain is going. You have not mentioned, can I mention one?
Yeah.
You have not mentioned the Nestle Crunch.
Oh, I didn't even have, I wasn't even thinking of that.
Oh, really? You love Nestle
I
Crunch.
I do love Crunch, but I love Bunch of Crunch more than, and that's not a Halloween
We'll count
candy.
That as the same candy.
Do I say that, or do I say Swedish Fish, or do I say those big fat Twizzlers that you only get in the Halloween, like, bags? I love those things.
What about the M&M?
Well, yeah, peanut M&Ms.
People take the M&M for
like
granted.
Like, regretting my whole list now. Okay, I'm just going to say... You're probably right. I should probably put Crunch on there. That's one of my favorites, so I'll go Crunch. I'm just not as much of a chocolate person, and I was going to go with a fruity candy because I already have two chocolates.
Yeah, I'll go for my number five. And this is only because I haven't had them in a while. I think I've been wanting them more. Would be of the Twizzler. Let's go with
okay.
The Twizzler.
Okay.
The OG strawberry Twizzler.
So tell us who won with that. I have Fruit Tootsie Rolls, Snickers, Kit Kat, Skittles, and Crunch Bar. And you had what?
The Milky Way, the Twix, Reese's. Or did I mix that up?
It doesn't matter.
The Starburst and the Twizzler.
So tell us which one of those ones you think is a better draft. So with that said, let's get right into our main topic for today. I'm so excited to talk about this. This is a little slight detour off of our survey that we've been using our answers for. This was something that a few weeks ago, months ago, I don't remember what it was, but at some point I don't remember if I like saw people discussing this or it just popped into my head, but I really was excited to get some feedback from other painters about this topic. Without all the preamble, I should probably just say what it is. I asked on our Instagram a few questions related to whether you as a live painter consider yourself an artist first or an event professional first. And I asked several poll questions about this. And then a few days ago, I actually opened this up to DMs. On Instagram, because since I hadn't asked about it on the survey, I was hoping to get some feedback and things I could share from other artists. And thankfully, I got a bunch of awesome answers. So the first thing I wanted to share with this is the original poll that I had put up. I had asked, do you consider yourself an artist first or an event professional first? Okay, I said the question correctly. And we had 79% of the responses were, I consider myself an artist first. Mm-hmm. And the other three options, there were four different options to choose from. One was, I consider myself an event professional first. And no one said that. Zero people responded to that one. And then another option was, I weight both equally. So you weight equally being an artist and an event professional. And we had 12% of people answer that one. And then the last one was, I consider myself to be something else. And then I said, please tell us. And we did have a few people answer that one, but they didn't tell me what they consider themselves. So if that was you, DM me and let me know, because I would love to hear what your different thing that you call yourself is. But I thought that was really interesting, and I'm glad we're going to be kind of building an episode around this. And I would love to hear what the artist of this podcast thinks about that question.
Well,
first, before we dive into the responses,
I mean, it would be easy for me to say, of course, I think of myself as an artist first, because I was an artist first before mm-hmm. we got into this. So if you want to have a boring answer, you know, I was an artist first and kind of assimilated myself into the wedding industry.
Right.
So from that perspective, yes, I do consider myself an artist first. And I also consider myself an artist first when I'm doing the craft of it at the event.
Right.
While I'm working, because, you know, I just have that hat on while I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I would look at that is that I am an artist first, but it is through the lens, I guess, of that of a wedding professional. It's kind mm-hmm. of like filtered and funneled through this funnel that is the event industry, and then whatever I do kind of pops out the other side, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think I would hope that our clients probably want me to consider myself an artist first.
That's
because
a good point.
You know, they want someone who's an expert, or not
that's
that
a really
I'm
good point.
Not that I'm an expert in anything, but they want someone who kind of feels that in their heart, and that's what they do, and that's what they're passionate about. But it's like, while I feel art in my heart, I feel wedding professional in my brain a little bit, if that makes sense.
That makes sense, yeah.
Because to not consider myself a wedding professional would just be some kind of denial.
Yeah.
You know, it would be wrong, because I am. I mean, no matter how you slice it, I am in the wedding industry.
Right.
So because of that, certain of my behaviors, certain of the way we interact with people, the way we price our product, the way we schedule, the way we conduct ourselves professionally, all that kind of stuff.
And that's not to say, if there are any couples listening, I just want to say, based on what he just said, there's a connotation in the wedding industry, and I know this from when I was a bride, because I thought this was true, that, oh, if you just say wedding, they'll price you 10 times higher, or like, oh, just lie and say you're having a get together and not a wedding. So that's not what he's talking about. He's not saying that we charge people more because they're having a wedding. He's just saying,
oh no,
events,
I mean, almost maybe
I just
want
to say that, just in case anybody is listening that thinks that we do that. We do not. I am a huge proponent of, I actually do know some vendors that do that. Most of them don't, though. Most of the time, the reasons that wedding pricing is higher is justified. It's just because of the amount of time and expense that go into creating an event. It has to be charged higher for that reason. But I just wanted to throw that little clarification in there.
Yeah, the way I think about that is that, in terms of pricing, is that we are part of a larger whole. We're part of someone's budget, basically.
Yep.
So rather than being just like a quote artiste, where, you know, I'm doing commissions and portraits for people and I can kind of charge what I want, I'm only competing with fellow artists and other, you know, I guess, professions that make unique gifts and heirlooms and stuff like that. We are also, quote, I guess, like competing, or, you know, we're sharing space with other wedding vendors, photographers, florists, all this kind of stuff. So when we think about what our pricing is going to be, you can't help but think about, okay, what do other aspects of this whole machine cost? Where do I see how we fit in that, as a cog in a bigger machine? And how can we use that to our advantage? How can we, in terms of not like pricing more, but just in terms of pricing ourselves appropriately, I guess you could say.
Something I've learned from knowing Jamie, and like originally when we first started dating, he was, you know, setting up and doing art shows and galleries and whatnot, is how expensive it is to get an original piece of art. And the way that most live painters charge, I'm not saying people charge too little or anything, but if this same couple were to go out to like a regular artist who just does studio work and ask them for a piece, they would probably have sticker shock. And people like make fun of the way that live painters charge all the time. I see so much, you know, of people thinking that they charge too much. And I'm like, go out there and get a commissioned art piece from someone that doesn't work in the wedding industry and see what you're looking at price wise, because I'm sure, it will be higher.
And that, from that standpoint, you know, it's, I can never look at what we offer and think that we charge too much or anything like that. We don't.
I would love to charge three times what we charge, which is what it's worth, but people won't pay that, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, and that's when I get into, you know, we are part of a bigger thing where people have certain budgets and this and that. So, you know, the more expensive you are, probably you would probably be appealing to more of a luxury wedding with a larger budget. Typically,
that's also a good tip for, any newer artists listening. I know all of the more veteran live painters and live painter helpers, such as myself, will always tell the newer artists, make sure you're charging appropriately. And by that, I mean, you're probably not charging enough, for what you do, because what you do is very hard and not many people can do it, and just don't sell yourself short. And I know it's like, when you're first starting out, you want to undercut people to be able to just get your first few clients, which is, I understand that. I've been there as a planner. I totally get that. But I would just say as a tip, maybe to do some research on the way that artists charge that are not painters, and maybe just kind of, it'll be a little more eye-opening for you as to, you know, what kind of industry standards are outside of the wedding industry for charging. Does that make sense? Is that like a good advice?
Potentially. I mean, definitely, if you go to a lot of shows, you'll see all kinds of prices out there. You'll see people who are, you might be shocked at how low they sell their stuff, at how high they sell their stuff. I think for me, the way I think about it is, as a live event painter, I feel like long term, I would want anyone pricing their work to eventually kind of not devalue what they do.
You want
your work to feel like it has value. So while, you know, getting a lot of jobs at a low price might feel good to get yourself out in the gate, long term that may not do you any good or the industry any good, because then people start expecting these obscene amounts of work for a very little amount of money. We don't want that. And then on the flip side, if you overcharge yourself, then that also kind of devalues what we do, because then it kind of takes away credibility at that point. So I think the goal is to always try to be as reasonable as you can. Of course, I do say asterisk. The goal, I suppose, would be everyone is eventually trying to charge more, because that kind of like a, what is it, the rising tide lifts all ships. What is it?
Yeah.
So, because a lot of what we do, we would not be able to do what we do if there weren't people who've been doing this for a while who are charging more and getting the industry familiar with, you know, what this costs. So, it's a different answer for everyone, but just the way I think about how we do it is that it's not just me painting for someone. I am part of a larger machine, And there's things that about that I have to take into consideration that I wouldn't normally if I was just like setting up shop at a show or on the street or a gallery or what have you. So
exactly. You have to be cognizant of what people can afford reasonably. And I know there's people sitting there right now listening to this and gritting their teeth that I just said that. But unfortunately, it just is reality, you know, for most weddings. And that's if you're just trying to market yourself to weddings, period. We do know some painters that market themselves to much more specific niches within the wedding industry that might have higher or lower budgets. So that's a different story. But just for people that are just marketing to any couple getting married, that's kind of what we're talking about here. I actually remembered why I put up these Instagram stories a few months ago. I'm pretty sure I remember now that maybe this is after we had gone to a networking event that I was not happy with. And I just kind of thought back of all the times that we've been to networking events. I mean, when I've been there for Jamie, because I have gone as a planner to some of them, but just talking about event painting. And it just got me thinking, like, about a lot of things that we see in the industry, at least down here. I know maybe up north, like northeastern U.S., it's a little different because it's more of an established part of the wedding industry up there. But down here, it's still sometimes like people look at you like you have three heads when you say what you do. And people are like, oh, that's a cute little idea. And all this kind of condescending stuff. And there does seem to be, and Jamie, you've been to way more weddings than me lately. You can tell me if I'm wrong about this. But there does seem to be this kind of stigma and gatekeeping with other wedding professionals that they don't think that this is a real part of the industry. And the networking event that we went to didn't have anything to do with that. It just got my wheels turning about all this stuff that I've felt with other wedding professionals. And I wanted to see what other people's experiences were. And we'll get into some of the other poll questions I had actually asked about networking events later. But that was where I originally thought about doing this episode from.
Yeah. And
do you feel that? Or am I just imagining that?
I see a couple different things when I'm at events. And here's what I will say is that the good vendors who are really respectful and follow, you know, professional protocols and, you know, ones that you probably know, I say generic you, the listener, ones that you probably know that you really respect as being professional, you know who I'm talking about. They're always excited for us to be there because they know that we are in service to the client. And they respect us from the fact that the client respects us, and they are excited for us to be there because they know that we're there to work hard for the couple and do something really special for them. So those people are out there. There are other people who assume there's kind of an ignorance about it where we are, quote, just the painter to mm-hmm. some people mm-hmm. to where they think that we should not be privy to things like timelines or more communication about the general process of that wedding day or a floor plan, or we're just kind of kept out of the loop because why would we need to be in the loop? We're just showing up to paint, right? Why, mm-hmm. you know, and that's definitely out there. And I do get that because I'll always get a planner who doesn't get in touch with me or
dealing with that today, actually,
or they wait too long to get in touch with me, or I have to chase someone down. I'm like, I don't know if you knew that I was coming today, and they're like, oh yeah, I knew. And then I'm like, well, why didn't I hear anything about this until today? So that's definitely out there. And I think that I think since we're not a mainstay of the industry, it's, you know, someone's attention is usually spent on the things that they know. The photographer, mm-hmm. the videographer, the florist, etc. Of course, like I said, the ones that we respect, any good, I guess I'm specifically talking about planners.
Well, we were going to have a whole episode about planners, and I'll just say this, and I'm going to repeat myself again on the episode. and I don't think any planners even listen to the show that I know of, but if you are a certified wedding planner through formerly the Bridal Society, I believe now they've changed their name to the Wedding Planner Society. I'm certified through them. And I've noticed any other CWP like myself are always amazing to work with. And everybody else, 9 times out of 10, is not. And that's kind of the bottom line that I've noticed. Yeah, but we're going to have a little episode about planners, so we can kind of move on from that discussion. But
well, I'll move on to other vendors, too, because I think there is some kind of, I don't know if you want to call it ignorance or somewhat something about, and I think, I guess, it's also just a genuine interest at times where people are very shocked that this is our full-time job. They're shocked to hear, you know, how many weddings we're able to do, or how many weddings a normal, you know, the average, I'm not just talking about me, I just mean like us, you know, in general. And, you know, sometimes it comes off as like, oh, wow, really? Like, you're able to do that? And so it can come off as condescending in that, in that sense.
I've also gotten the sense, and I've seen this, and I'm thinking of one wedding in particular that you probably are going to know what I'm talking about when I mention this. Certain vendors, and I will single out photographers and videographers in this instance, will sometimes act kind of threatened that he is there, and the claws start coming out, you know. And that was another thing I was kind of trying to get at with these questions. I mean, more or less with these questions, I was trying to get at, do other people feel this type of maybe sometimes tension or condescending behavior with vendors and planners in their area? Is it just something in our area? Is it just, you know, am I just imagining it? And I'm excited to talk about the other questions that I asked, but that's kind of where I was coming from, was just a sense of a lot of times. I mean, I definitely feel like an outsider because I'm just the admin person, but you know, a lot of times I do sense that there's this kind of like, oh, you're the other kind of attitude and clickiness and whatnot with vendors. And
yeah, sometimes you do get that where you feel like, I think the word outsider is pretty good. You feel like you're kind of on the peripheral of what's going on. And again, I say this with a huge asterisk because I work with a lot of photographers and videographers who are awesome. And probably the same way that you've said with the certified wedding planners, where there's tons of vendors who they'll help you if you ingratiate yourself to them. Say like, hey, I'm the painter. Great to meet you. I'm going to be painting. I'll stay out of your way. You know, I always try to do that with the photo team and all that, so that, you know, I can have a good rapport with them and we're all kind of working together. And when that happens, it feels great. There are a couple of times where sometimes, you know, someone, I think, it, you know, when you say the word threatened, that is kind of there. I feel like it's almost like I'm an extra thing, and it's just because I'm an extra different, you know, thing for that day that I kind of maybe disrupt people's routines maybe. But usually, you know, people are pretty good about, you know, they come over and get pictures or what have you. But yeah, we've all seen it. You meet people who kind of are, not belittle you, but like, oh, this is like a cute little thing that you do. Maybe it's someone who's like a head of like an agency, or maybe it's someone who's another kind of vendor. It happens. But you know, when we talk about, you know, how we are a part of this whole wedding thing, even if it's like a 70-30 split between I'm an artist and a wedding professional, you know, we're all always there trying to, you know, be as much of a vendor as anyone else is and deserving of all the communication and respect that the other vendors also so get. And when we don't get that, it can be frustrating. Unfortunately, I'm sure the mainstay vendors, they get their fair share of, you know, non-communicative planners and venues and stuff like that. So I don't think we're alone in that But you know, we do our best as that luxury, quote, luxury vendor to be as much of a part of it as anyone else.
I wanted to go ahead and start sharing some of the comments that we had received from other painters about this topic. And I wanted to start with this one. This is from Alicia King. She goes by Alicia King on Instagram, and she is based in St. Louis. And she had said, when it comes to the event pro side of the job, I believe that professionalism comes with experience in working with multiple weddings and multiple settings. I think working with all different types of people has been a boon for me because it has allowed me to find that line of personable and professional. Building relationships with my clients, establishing expectations, being confident in the quality of my work, it comes with being an artist first. But having the ability to put those skills to the test every weekend, that's the event pro side of the job.
So that's a really good way to put it.
I really like that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I especially like how you talk about it comes with the experience of doing multiple weddings at multiple venues and all that, because it's very true, because as an artist, you show up and you know how to do your thing. But what you may not know right off the bat is, you know, you're learning your boundaries with the event in general, in terms of, like, you know, if you have questions, how to get help from a fellow vendor, you know, how to insert yourself like in a polite way, how to, you know, what good timing is for talking with planners and the couple if you need to, things like that. And that kind of stuff comes from experience. And that's like the whole event pro side of things, mm-hmm. where it's all about living in an ecosystem with these other people that you might not know how to do right off the bat. Was that like a whole gobbledygook of me saying nothing, or did that make sense?
I think it made sense. What I was really hoping the answers would be when I asked my original question of which one do you consider yourself first, I was hoping more people would pick both equally, because in my mind, obviously I'm not an artist, so I don't really have, you know, a real opinion on this because I don't have the experience to back that up. But in my mind, you guys are both. You're 50-50. And just like you were saying, just being at the events and knowing how to behave, and like Alicia had said in her comment, you know, knowing how to talk to clients and just knowing the flow of an event and, you know, knowing what to expect on your day, that's not an artist, that's an event professional. And I think they, in my humble opinion, you know, if I were an artist, a wedding painter, they would be weighted equally for me, because you don't have one without the other to be able to be successful at this, in my opinion.
There is all a touch of, I think, legendary comedian Kevin Pollak would call it, hey, look at me disease, mm-hmm. in a way. And it's okay to have a little bit of that, you know, mm-hmm. But you want to be able to moderate that part of you. And that's like, but you need that as a creative, as an artist, you know, want for showing off your skills and stuff like that.
This part of our, what we're talking about here specifically, we're going to get into when we talk about social media later. Because there's a lot of anonymous comments that we received on our survey about the way that live painting is portrayed on social media by the painters themselves. And there's a couple common threads of comments that I received about this topic, the hey, look at me disease. And something I'm like super passionate about, and have a hard time with sometimes, but I try to keep the forefront of our public facing social media messaging, whatever you want to call it, to be client serving. And, you know, there's some of the complaints or things about, like, you know, people complaining about their clients publicly, or people making reaction videos without asking the person first, and just, you know, making it more about I'm a TikTok star than, you know, I'm serving clients and couples, and I'm really grateful to be here. And we're going to definitely get into that conversation on a later episode, but this does remind me of that topic.
I mean, I guess mostly what I'm thinking of is that as an artist, you know, I want to do things my way. I have a vision for what I think is the best, but that can't conflict with the needs of the event and the needs of the client. And that's where the event pro thing comes in, where you're like, as an artist, I want to be like, I'm putting my foot down. This is the way I work. This is the way I think this should be done. This is my vision. There's that, hey, look at me disease kind of part of me that's like, I know better. This is my work, blah, 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 blah. You know, I want to hang it in the gallery and that kind of thing. But, and this is kind of the illustrator part of me, but also just at the end of the day, we're like a hired gun for this. So that does kind of conflict with like an artist who would say wants to have a gallery exhibition of their own stuff. You know, it's you're not the show here, right? The couple's the show. The wedding's the show. Those two things can conflict with each other. And it's knowing when to put your own desires aside in for the benefit of what your client wants. And, you know, we all have clients who have ideas for what they want in their paintings. And maybe we disagree with. We'll try to guide them to do. We've talked about this before. You know, we'll try to push them in the direction we think would benefit them. But that doesn't always go that way. At the end of the day, you're a hired gun. You're like an art mercenary doing work for people in the Wild West or something. So, that event pro side of you is the one that steps back and works with people and has that give and take with, you know, having that mutual respect for what the goals of the event as a whole are, rather than just what is the best for what I think this piece of art should be.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. But you know, to do what we do, you have to have a little bit of that, you know, spark that needs attention. I mean, that's all of us, as we paint and we want to show people our paintings. I once had someone ask me, why do I sign my work?
Yep.
And I was like, well, I want someone to know that I did it. And they're like, well, isn't that like egotistical? I was like, I don't know. Is it egotistical for an author to have their name on the front of a book? Like, what's the difference? Like, you want to be able to have someone, when they see something, know it was you. Is that selfish? I guess so, because there's a little part of my brain that wants people to be like, hey, 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 that was me. That's pretty natural. And I don't want anyone to think that someone else did it. So.
Well, I don't really understand that comment either, because it's like, think about like your car. It says Honda on it or Toyota. Think about, you know, when I get food for McDonald's, the cup says McDonald's on it. What is the difference? What is the difference between that and you signing your work?
Yeah, this was a conversation I had years ago at my job as a sip and paint teacher at the Painting with a Twist. And, you know, at the end of the day, we always have everyone sign their painting. And the guy was like, oh, why do we have to do that? Isn't that like, that's something I never get with artists. He was like an accountant or something. Yeah, it was very confusing. And, you know, I guess as an artist, we're all just a bunch of attention seeking, you know, crazy people. But, you know, I don't know. That's not exactly what we're talking about. But I guess I'm trying to say there's a part of us that's the artist who wants to show people our work and create and share. And then there's the event pro that has to step aside and know what our boundaries and limits are, and know how to weave in and out of communicating with other people in different, you know, aspects of a moving machine.
The next comment I want to share comes from Ryan Kinseth R. He had said, artist first, because it would be very difficult to become an art event professional without art first.
I guess that's the statement that it would be easier to assimilate an artist into the wedding industry as a painter than it would be to take someone who's in the event industry and turn them into an artist. Would that be kind of what he's saying?
Yeah, and I totally get the sentiment. However, we do know people that transition from some other aspect of events into live painting and vice versa. We've you know, heard people doing that. So the thing that's so interesting about the events industry is how fluid it is. And there's so many people that I know that have done everything under the sun in the events industry until they find their thing. And the unfortunate thing about art and about a lot of what we talked about this a lot last season as well, is that anybody can say they're an artist. I could start painting and say I'm a live painter and start charging, you know, and that's really anything in the wedding industry. Let's be real. You know, that's a problem with planners too. People plan a birthday party for their niece and suddenly they're saying they're a wedding planner. You know, so that's why I'm a little bit reluctant to totally agree with that. I totally get what you were saying with that comment, but, you know, for better or worse, the wedding industry does have a lot of people in it, in every aspect of the events industry, that just decided one day that they were going to say that they were professional at what they do. And that definitely goes for live painters.
I totally get what he's saying, and I would probably agree with it the same way that I would agree that if I see someone who's a musician, I would assume that they were a musician first, and they consider themselves musicians first.
Yeah,
who happen to work in the events industry.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I totally get that sentiment of it.
Here's my other thought, if you don't mind me saying, because, I mean, first off, there's definitely a delineation between the word artist and the word painter, right?
Yeah.
Because we do know people who have transitioned to being painters from other aspects of the wedding industry, but I think, like, in their heart and in their mind, they probably consider themselves an artist of some kind. They're just kind of looking for a way to express,
that's a good point,
what that is. So is it, if someone's like in sales and accounting and all of a sudden they transition to being a live painter, how common is that? I don't think it's very common.
No.
Whereas it is much more likely, I think, that someone said like designs, quote, you know, the word design something for weddings, and then they wind up getting into doing event painting because they were already doing some kind of designing, and, you know, that often comes with doing drawings or thumbnails and working with color and things like that. So it's a little more adjacent. So I would probably agree with him. There's exceptions to every rule. Of course, there are people who were in the industry or consider that, like, they just decide, I want to be a live painter.
We've seen that. We've seen,
rather, you know what I mean?
People do that, yeah.
Where maybe they haven't done any kind of paint or art creation whatsoever.
I've told this story to a few people, so I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but there is a photographer here in Orlando, and there's 500,000 photographers here in Orlando, so I don't think anyone's gonna know who I'm talking about. But there is a photographer here in Orlando who made a post maybe a year ago, and she said, oh, I just went to the craft store and got a canvas and some brushes. Let's try out this live wedding painting thing. And the next day she had a price list on her website for wedding paintings. She had never touched a paintbrush in her life. And
you would hope that.
Yeah. So that is a thing.
So you would hope then that the industry would potentially weed out people who don't truly have a passion in it.
Yeah.
You know, because the passion for the art has to be there.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you are just a machine making paintings. Like, we have to be wanting, to me, the most successful people that do this will consider themselves an artist first, just because that's what people come to us for primarily.
Yeah, I really liked...
That's why I have you.
Wait, what?
That's why I have you, because you're, like, the brains and the, you know, the... You do a lot of the back-end professional event booking stuff that maybe I'm not as good at. But if you do have someone that helps you with booking like that, maybe that does free your brain up to be a bit more 70% artist, 30%.
That's true. That's a good point.
Event pro. So for those of you who are doing this completely on your own, maybe they would be the ones more likely to think, you know, I have to be half and half, because 90% of the time you're just sitting around doing secretarial computer work, and then 10% of the time you're doing the actual painting. But I would say this, even if you're only doing the painting stuff 10% of the time, your heart and mind of it all takes up a much bigger percentage of what you do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. So I have one more here that I want to share. This is from Hannah Aaron Studio. She is based in Dallas. She said, and this, I'm so happy, Hannah, that you said this, because this is right on theme with everything we've been talking about this whole season. She said, I consider myself an artist first, but I do have trouble setting boundaries and have little to no time for personal work.
Relatable. Because I understand that, where you know, you're this person that does this, and you're saying, I consider myself an artist that does this, but you know, burnout is definitely a thing.
Yeah.
If you're spending a lot of time painting these paintings for other people, and then you need to take a step back, how many colleagues do we know who, you know, schedule a certain month of the year off every year because mm-hmm. it's just, you can't keep that pace up. And maybe that's when you decide that you want to try to get a little of your personal work in there. And that's important. That's something we talk about a lot lately, where we say, hey, what's a month that doesn't have a lot going on? We might want to take that month and just say we're not booking anymore for that month.
Yeah.
If you have the luxury to do that, then that might be something you want to think about. Of course, in our history, we haven't always had the luxury of saying something like that, because, you know, you're saving up for this, or you're paying off the, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, but just that little bit of recharge may benefit your artist's painting work, you know, exponentially.
Yep.
Just giving your brain a bit of a break from both the art and the event pro side.
Yeah.
Because it can really wear down on you with, you know, the amount of scheduling you have to do and the amount of you should all see, you know, I have a few reminders on my phone, but you should all see the gargantuan list of reminders that Amanda keeps on her phone.
Mm-hmm. There's like 20 things a day.
It's wild. And there's a lot to keep, you know, and that's the event pro side of you that has to be organized. It has to say, oh, I have a little meeting with such and such on Tuesday, and then I have to drop this painting off on Wednesday, and this, and you're trying to meet deadlines and be professional in terms of living up to other people's expectations and this mm-hmm. and that. So I totally understand that, where it's like you're doing all the stuff for other people and you might not have as much of your time for yourself that you wish you did.
We're running into something this week. Some of you may have seen on our business Instagram that this stuff is catching up with us, because we've had several major emergencies this week in our personal life. And this was supposed to be our couple days off here after a crazy several months, and another crazy several months coming up starting tomorrow. And it's been spent at the emergency vet's office, or helping contractors because they didn't build our house correctly, or, you know, yada yada. It's hard. And like I said in our last episode last week, maybe we can get into this a little bit more now, though we are running low on time. For me, I just really have such extreme fears about money and about, you know, losing our livelihood and not being able to pay our bills and all that kind of stuff that saying no is not in my vocabulary. Saying we're busy is not in my vocabulary. We actually have scheduled a vacation for January that we've already turned down several events to go on this vacation. And we just said, come hell or high water, we're going on this vacation. And so, you know, we do have that. And that's like the first time that we're doing that. And I've almost canceled it several times just because I don't want to miss out on that one job or that one wedding. And it's difficult. It's very difficult. I also live in a world where I cannot turn myself off. I don't ever stop working. I have a fear that if I stop working, I will never start again. So even if we're trying to relax, if we're at a theme park, for example, which is where I like to go to relax, you know,
keep in mind, we do live in Orlando.
Yeah. If we're,
we have to remind you.
Yeah. If we're, you know, out at Epcot for the night, trying to watch whatever band is playing at Epcot, I'm doing emails or doing social media while I'm there. I have a really big problem stopping, and it's been really hard the past several months because we've had issues in our personal life, not with each other, but just, you know, stuff keeps coming up, and I don't know when is the last time that I just sat there and took a breath and wasn't thinking about work. I don't have that. And it's really hard also to explain that to people because I think a lot of people think that I don't have a real job, and including me sometimes, even though I don't ever stop working. I've even had other painters be like, so what do you do all day? And I'm just like, excuse me? What do you think I do all day? I answer emails and set up travel stuff for Jamie and talk to planners and field inquiries and work on this podcast and set up stuff in Canva because we have to have little graphics for every little thing and do social media. And it's like,
well, it's you people can easily underestimate how much time it would actually like, because a man is way better at this stuff than I am. But you know, for me, and like I have to email someone and then I look up and like an hour has passed because I've rewritten some email like four times because you need to, you know, articulate something a certain way. And then your whole afternoon is blown by just doing a very small amount of stuff. So you all know how that can get away from you. And over time, whether it's your personal artwork or just your personal time in general, if we're talking about that, you know, event pro side of you, you know, if you feel like, you know, you're just not having that me time as much to create, or you're not having that me time to just take a step away from the computer and that kind of stuff. And that's something we're always working on. And, you know, part of it is going to be budgeting. You know, if you're worried about money, you know, you can control how much you spend on things. There's savings, all that kind of stuff goes into trying to, you know, make plans that you need to just step away, do your own thing for a little bit. Go watch four seasons of Halloween Wars the week yes. before Halloween, which is a great show. We're going to talk about that later, I'm sure.
That show actually, I do think, has some relevance.
Yeah, because I
to
always
what you guys do.
Well, I was doing a painting. For those of you who don't know, Halloween Wars is a spinoff of the Food Network show Cupcake Wars, where several teams band together to create pieces of art, basically made out of food. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I don't mean to...
We'll talk about that later.
All I really mean to say is sometimes you just gotta like turn your brain off and watch some TV or go to a movie or something. And thank you so much for bringing that up. Because you can burn out making other people's paintings, and you're like, the last thing I feel like doing right now is painting.
It's really hard also, and part of me feels very selfish for being so burnt out, because who pays the price of us being burnt out? It's the clients that are coming up next. And, you know, not necessarily for me so much because I'm not actually creating a product, but like a finished product like the paintings. But it's just hard. It's really hard to say no. And I feel like when I've heard people talk about this particular discussion in the past, I'm like, wow, that's so braggy. Like, oh, you just have so much opportunity and it's so hard for you to say no. Like, oh, what a hard problem to have. And it's now being on the other side of it, I don't see it that way at all. I see it as, in my mind, any inquiry could be the last inquiry that we ever get. And if I say no, I am denying the privilege that I feel to be able to do this. And it's disrespectful to, you know, my own self and our legacy of running our business that I would ever say no to someone when we are actually available for their date, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's learning to put boundaries on yourself and limits on yourself, because none of us are invincible, for sure. You know, you got to throw your hat out there as much as possible, because who knows how many fish you're going to be able to catch.
Exactly.
That was like three different, analogies. But no, I understand that. And it's, you know, it's living with the job and learning about, you know, it's okay to take breaks. You got to learn what works for yourself. We got to learn what works for us. You know, I try to do things, you know, between paintings. I try to, you know, I always have like a show I'm trying to watch or just something to get my brain off of that side of what I'm doing, because, you know, I like to make sure I'm recharged for the next job. When I'm at a wedding, my brain is 100% there.
For me, I think I've used this analogy before. If anyone watches the show Always Sunny, and there's the episode where Charlie's mom keeps flicking the lights, because if she doesn't flick the lights 3 times, Charlie will die. And that's how I feel about running our business. It's, if I don't answer this email within an hour, that's it. It's over. The business is over. You know, if I don't make X amount of social media posts, the business is over. If we don't get X amount of hits on our website, is hits even still a thing? That's like a very 90s phrase or whatever, early 2000s. Views on our website, you know, it's over. And I was just talking to another artist actually yesterday about she had gone through a slow period, and she was like, whenever I go through a slow period, I think that it's over and I'm ready to throw in the towel. And I was like, I'm so glad you said that. I don't feel as alone anymore. Like, finally someone else says that, because that's the way that I feel. And I don't know, I guess we're getting off on a really big tangent about this here, but it's hard. It's hard.
It's all kind of intertwined with the same thing, because I think, you know, the original answer was, you know, you feel like you don't have enough time for your own personal work as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
But that goes, like we're talking about, we're half artists and we're half this other event professional thing. And that whole side of running a business, booking people, schedule, like that is the same kind of thing where it's like all of your time and energy is spent on that you don't feel like you have the kind of energy to, you know, take yourself away from it.
Right.
So it's all kind of the same thing, you know, and this is something that we talk about every episode, learning the difference between an ebb and flow, a natural cycle of the business, and what is like a bad trend that we need to course correct or the business is going to blow up in our face. You know,
this is so relevant to what we're dealing with right now. I'll just say, I don't know if we'll keep this in here or not, but our beloved kitty got really sick this week. That's part of what we've been dealing with. And as a result of that, we've been keeping an eye on him the past couple days. And I'm having a really hard time discerning between, like, wait a minute, does he just sleep this much normally and we're just not watching him 24/7? Yeah,
it's like every, and this is the same thing that happens to me too, when it's like, you know, like when you're like, you have like a bump or something, you're like, wait, do I have a bump on both elbows, or is it always like this?
Yeah.
So we're looking at our cat like, is he sad? Wait, is he always like this? Did his eye just move? Like, so we're like overanalyzing everything about, and then we're like, wait a minute, he's a cat. He probably sleeps all day. So we have to like remind ourselves what's normal and what is abnormal. And the moral of the story to me is like, we have to take a step back. Just like they always say, when in doubt, zoom out, you know, take a bigger look at everything, see how things look. Don't measure things by the minute or the day, measure them by the month or the year and see how things are going that way. And
and shameless plug, we did a whole episode about this topic a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago at this point. If you scroll back, it's like, I want to say like 5 episodes before this, maybe. It's the most recent one that's titled Bonus Episode. We go into all of this in a lot more detail in that episode if you would like to hear more about that. It's called something like Our Thoughts on the Events Industry Going into 2024 or something of that nature.
Yeah, it's really tricky, and time and the time we spend painting or the time we spend working on the business side of things can be, you know, really something that really consumes a lot of your life. And you know, just like anything, you gotta take time for yourself. If you're not doing that, you really should force yourself to figure out how to do that. Spend some time with people.
Easier said than done.
That make you happy.
And, we don't ever take time.
Well, sure. I'm really good at dispensing this advice. Yeah. maybe not as much at taking it, but we're always trying to do better. You know, have a show on in the background that you're keeping up with, or go out to dinner with someone you haven't spent time with, you know, just to get yourself away from things. And or like that answer would suggest, maybe just take an hour or two to just go do some kind of art that is not event painting related, if that really helps you kind of get some of that energy out and do something for you that is not someone something's paying for. It's not something that is being judged or
doesn't have a deadline.
Yeah. It doesn't have a deadline. You know, we do these paintings like we're in school, we're trying to get a good grade on them. So, you know, 'cause you want the approval of people, and just take a step back, try to do stuff for different reasons, you know, do something for fun. Remember why you love doing what you do, and get some distance from that.
The last thing I want to talk about, I'm not going to do a palate cleanser today because we actually have a couple of extra survey questions I had asked when I asked my original question about the whether you consider yourself an event pro or an artist first. So the first one I had asked, and these are all going to kind of be about the same topic. So the first one I had asked, or I guess technically it was the second one, was, do you attend networking events with other event pros? And the answers were, I have, or I've attended one or a few. I have attended them often. I would like to, or I have no interest in attending them. And 57% of people said that they've attended a few. 29% said that they often attend the event professional networking events. And 14% said, I would like to attend one someday. No one said they have no interest in them. So the next one, related, have you ever joined a wedding or event pro society, group, collaborative, etc.? An example in our area, there used to be, actually it doesn't exist anymore in the way that it used to, is called Orange Blossom Bride. So it was for Central Florida wedding pros. You'd pay per year and you'd get like a small network of other event professionals to kind of just chat with, Facebook groups, go to events specifically for that that group, yada yada. So the answers for this were, I have joined one, I have not joined one, I used to belong to one but no longer do, and I've never heard of a group like this in my area, was the last answer. So the top answer was 56% said they had not joined one. 19% said they didn't think there were any in their area. And 12% was actually for both of the bottom answers, got exactly 12. 12% said they had joined one, and 12% said they used to, but no longer. And then finally, the last question, if you've ever been in one of the networking groups I mentioned, or I said even if you just have been to a networking event, period, for event professionals, was it beneficial for you specifically as a live wedding painter in your area? Not just in general for you to network with people, but as a painter. And the answers were, I have made connections, I have not received any benefits from these networkers, or I have seldom or rarely. No one said they had no benefits. Everyone had some kind of benefit. 50% of people said they have seldom or rare benefits, and 50% said they have made connections or learned a lot from these events. So, all of that being said, what do you think about all that?
You know, the way I think about, and I'm going to first start thinking about, you know, joining a local group. The way I would initially think about it is, okay, this is an investment where usually you would be paying X hundreds of dollars for the year.
Usually like between $300 and $800, I would say. And 800 is like really high.
And, you know, whenever there's the idea of an expense like that, you know, the back of your mind is saying, if I spend this money, will I make it back? Is this going to be, you know, am I going to get a return on my investment? Because you would think to yourself, well, if I can get one wedding out of this, it will have paid for itself, right? Mm-hmm. That doesn't always happen. But I think that's kind of the mindset that prevents, because we have a lot of people there who have not, probably the majority, you said 50-something percent of people had not joined a local area like this. That could be a combination of people saying, you know what, I don't know if I'm willing to make that investment, or I don't think it will benefit, you know, or, you know, there's just that unknown to it. And, you know, we're always looking for ways to get our names out there. It's all marketing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think my experience has been, we've had some success with smaller networking groups. Would you kind of agree with that? Versus a larger one where maybe we're like a smaller thing in a larger list of things.
Well, we had one experience at a networking event. This was during COVID, where we went to this huge, like, you know, everybody who's everybody was there. This one company, which actually they don't exist anymore, but they were really big. They got sold, but they were a very big company in the wedding events industry in Orlando. And I forget what it was. I don't remember if they like had a new space or what it was, but for some reason they were having some big thing at their headquarters. And we were lucky enough to get invited, and there was so many people there, and we were kind of just wandering around and didn't like know anybody there really. Other than a few people, one of which happened to be this planner that Jamie works with quite often, or efficient that Jamie works with quite often, that we really like. And she pulled someone aside and said, hey, why don't you talk to this guy? He can really help you. And this man was the owner of a company here in Orlando that they do a lot of wedding shows and networking stuff. And he basically took us under his wing and gave us a bunch of exposure. I hate to use that word, but exposure at these wedding shows that he puts on. He let us do a couple of them completely free of charge. And then eventually it was a discounted rate. And then eventually it was full price. And we got a lot of weddings off of that. So that was like the one time that we've had a good experience with it. The other times it's all been a little bit bunk, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And I equate that with stuff I've done in the past with doing illustration and stuff, where, you know, you put yourself in the right place at the right time. And sometimes that takes a long, long, long time, you know, for someone who's a writer or an illustrator or something like that. It could take years of going to different kinds of conventions and panels and whatnot before maybe you meet someone that you click with. We got very lucky where we clicked with someone early on and found out about some other shows we could do. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is the other thing I was going to say was, you know, it's great to meet people and, you know, you get to know people who can pass your information on, and that's all great. And, you know, you can't, you know, measure the value of having good connections with other people. But at the end of the day, to me, I've found the most the thing that has helped us the most is being able to go to some of these shows where I am allowed to paint at them.
Uh-huh.
And because, you know, what we do is very unique and it's hard to make that sales pitch necessarily verbally.
Mm-hmm.
But if someone can see what we're doing, and I would say even if it's just showing off our work, maybe because I've gone to shows where I'm not painting at and I've had success there, but being able to physically show someone what we're all about to me seems like the biggest way to success at a lot of these networking events and groups and all that kind of stuff. So I really enjoy that aspect of it, and that I felt confident enough in our what we do, where if we can kind of get in front of people and get some visibility, that may lead to more bookings. And more often than not, when we go to a networking, just like a show, I feel like we generally walk out with someone that we're really happy to have connected with a couple. Mm-hmm. I feel more excited with that aspect of it all than necessarily like the mixers kind of situation.
Yeah, I can't do those.
That's just something we're not as good at. Some people are really, really good at that. You know, it's a little weird to me sometimes to go to those events because you just know everyone is there. They've got their business cards. Mm-hmm. They're trying to, you know, further their business. That's what they're there for. And you used to get this when you were a planner, where you would would tell someone you were a planner.
Uh-huh.
And we're like, oh, here's my business card. Here's my, you know, uh-huh. People would really, like moths to a flame,
mm-hmm.
never heard of you before.
Yep.
Want to be involved with you and what you do.
I was going to bring this up. I know we're going super long on time. Maybe this will just be a long episode because I think this is an important discussion. The problem, and I've been really trying my darndest to be more chipper on this episode and not say anything negative, but I'm going to say this. The problem with the wedding industry, at least as we have seen, is that there is a mentality of vendors of, I don't really want to help you if you can't help me. And I'm going to kiss up to people that can help me. And if you can't help me, yeah. then go F yourself.
I do think that's every industry.
Well, but, sure.
But it is,
but
I think maybe in the wedding industry, it's more transparent because of the
hierarchy.
The hierarchy. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I was just going to say hierarchy of needs at the wedding, where we are a luxury thing. We are not food, right? We're not so essential to the wedding that, like, if we don't go, people won't be able to eat or something like that.
That's the problem. And this is probably a good way to wrap this up. Before I say this, thank you so much to everyone that has been doing all my polls that I've been putting up on Instagram. I really appreciate it. We usually get like several dozen responses on every single poll I put up, which is more than I would expect. So thank you guys for that. And thank you to everyone that sent their DMs in for these questions that were not on the survey. I was so happy to hear from some people that had not filled the survey out so we could get some different perspectives. With all of this stuff said, this was kind of why I was asking all these questions and wanted to talk about this, because I was just wondering how other painters were feeling about their place in the events industry as event industry people, not as artists in the event industry, if that makes sense. And it was really cool to hear so many different things, and some answers were exactly what I expected in terms of like the poll amounts for each like response that people chose. And some were definitely not what I expected. So I hope this discussion has been helpful for you. I would love to hear what people think about this. Obviously, I just heard from some people who had answered my Instagram plea for comments, but I feel like this is a discussion that needs to happen more often, because for me, my ultimate goal, of course, is for wedding painters to assimilate more into the wedding industry and to be allowed to assimilate by the other vendors, if that makes sense, for the other vendors to open that door. So I don't know if other painters feel that way, if you like kind of being on the outside of things or not. I would love to hear that. But anyway, all of that ramble aside, hopefully you all know what I'm trying to say. I was just really curious as to how other people felt they fit in the industry, the events industry. And I'm really glad that so many of you were able to share that with us.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me, the more, you know, we've, you know, talked to our interviews in the past, and the more we've heard your answers out there, how much we all have in common.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about, you know, this is something we always think about all the time, is like, what is our place in the wedding industry? Like, in terms of how much are we as just like another tent pole in this wedding industry versus us kind of being outside the tent looking in.
Exactly.
And getting to participate. Exactly. In the fun. And you know, it's a little column A and a little column B, and you know, maybe it's important that we are always kind of have like one foot in that tent and one foot outside it, so that we can,
that's a good point,
continue to, you know, do what we do really well without necessarily being enveloped by the business / event aspect of it, and keep our minds on why people are coming to us in the first place.
Yeah, that's a good point. And with that said, thank you guys all so much again, as I said, for always being so eager to participate with the show. I really, 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 really appreciate it. I hope each and every person that has even just clicked one of the poll answers ever knows how much I appreciate that, because that is what is formulating our show this season. So thank you. And with that being said, we will be back to another survey question next week. And I think that should do it for today.
Yeah. Thank you again for all your answers, for listening. You know, you help us keep the show going, and looking forward to what we have next.
See you next week.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Live Painter Podcast. Keep painting, keep learning, keep growing, and if you're not an artist or an event pro, we hope you keep listening. We appreciate you. To find out more about the Live Painter Podcast, you can visit livepainterpodcast.com or at Live Painter Podcast on Instagram. You can also feel free to email us with any questions or comments to livepainterpodcast@gmail.com. To find out more about Jamie and myself, you can visit our website at eventpaintingbyjamie.com. That is eventpaintingbyjamie.com. Thank you so much again for listening, and we'll see you next time.